Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
And now, part two of JG's Radio Free Insanity. Nice. You found part two of JG's Radio Free Insanity right here for February the 10th, 2006. We're about to be joined on the phone line by prime time Helix Skipper. You guys might know him from his time in WCW. Most likely you know him from his time in TNA. Famous for his Hurricane Rana off the top of that six-sided cage at Turning Point last year. We're going to talk a little bit about that. A whole lot of things to cover with Helix. Always a pleasure to have him on. So let's bring him on the line. So join me in welcoming to the show, everybody, prime time, Helix Skipper. Helix, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, baby? And you know what time it is.
I think it is prime time for all of us.
Here you go.
That's right. And
you, prime time in TNA.
And you built the house, my friend.
Here you go.
So it's got to be exciting right now for you, man. I mean, TNA announcing that they're doing primetime as well, going in April, I guess, to Thursdays. What's the mood like back there, and how do you feel about it?
Oh, everybody's on fire. They just know we always wanted a better time slot. First, we were happy to get Spike. We had to deal with the Saturday time slot late at night. Now we got a better time slot. So the next step after this is to get a two-hour time slot. But we're really happy that we got this 1 hour. And we'll do like we did on Saturday. We'll show them what we made of, and next you know, they'll give us the time we want.
See, it's actually a funny thing, because it's like, for years, WWE was occupying that 11 o'clock kind of Saturday night time slot. And even with their shows, they were trying to do original things, and they couldn't get people to watch that time period. Now you guys are actually moving out of that slot to Thursday
right.
At 8, which is a lot of the fans were used to watching SmackDown at that time in the U.S., so that's got to be a good way to kind of bring that audience over with you.
Yeah, we'll give them all a surprise. They still think they're going to see SmackDown, and next thing you know, they see TNA on Spike. It's on.
Hell yeah, man, hell yeah. So, I mean, what's it like now? I mean, it's got to feel like you're moving on kind of to the next level, a company that you started. I mean, you were there for a long time, man. You were there back when they were doing that Fox Sports Net thing in the middle of the day on, I don't know, some day that didn't really exist. And you know, so now you guys moved to Spike TV. It just seems like it's just progressing at this rate where by the end of the year, you guys are either going to be, I mean, it's make it or break it this year for you guys.
Yeah, I remember, you know, day one back in Nashville, Tennessee, and then we moved to Fox Sports Net, which was a big step for us. But, you know, we can get like so many people to watch it with their time slots and showing in different areas. And now we're moving up again where we get even more homes. And now on top of that, we got a better time slot. It's just, you know, I remember day one when all of this that we have now didn't seem possible, and now we got it. So, you know, we're just moving up more and more and more, and all we have to do is just keep doing what we're doing, and we'll get where we want to be.
Well, man, in all honesty, I mean, you guys came from doing those weekly pay-per-views, and I don't know, what was your feelings when it first began, and you didn't even have a TV deal. You were doing every Wednesday night, going for $10 a pop, and a lot of people were dooming TNA to doom and gloom, and it kind of seems like you guys have definitely dug yourselves out of that hole.
Yeah, when I first heard of it, I was like, why are we doing this backwards? And they kind of explained, you know, that that's the way it is when you don't have, you know, a TV station to back you or so on and so forth. So we had to do pay-per-view to start off just to get people to watch us, and then we was hopefully going to try to move from that to get a station. But, you know, what I learned, the wrestling was always hard, but the backstage stuff of trying to get a program and sponsors and whatever is even harder. But we're digging ourselves out of that hole. I mean, we actually really did it, because there were days in the beginning where it was like, well, we might as well ride this for as long as it lasts, because it's not going to last long. People are not going to keep paying $10 a week. And lo and behold, we did enough $10 a week where, you know, now we're on Spike, and people thought we wouldn't make it. People thought we wouldn't make it past a year, and it's been 3 years now. So, you know, I've been here since day one, and I'm really happy to see how far we've come, you know, with the Carters help pushing us, Dixie, you know, supporting us, and Jeff starting the company, you know, doing what he believes, you know, and look where we're at now. It's so hard to believe, you know, words can't describe how, you know, the boys feel in the back.
That's really cool. I mean, you've actually, You've seen every kind of step of how a company morale is backstage. You've been in WCW at the dying days. You were in WWE doing the developmental stuff, and now you're in TNA on this upswing. You're actually probably one of the few wrestlers left that's worked for the WWE system, WCW, and now TNA. If you had to compare the three, where would you kind of put each one as far as your time there and how you feel about the company as a whole?
Well, if I'm comparing, what are we comparing? The shows or the locker room?
Oh, just your feeling about being with the company, being in WCW. I mean, the locker room, the morale, and the whole feeling of being in a company that was on a downturn, which was WCW, company on upswing, like TNA, and a company that kind of, I don't know, I mean, you have your own opinions on them, being in WWE's developmental.
Well, as far as WWE, it's hard to really compare them because where they put me in a training school, so I wasn't really a part of their show. You know, I wasn't really making an effect on their products of making people want to pay for a pay-per-view to see me or, coming to a show to see me. I was just at a school training. I never got out of the training school. It was like, we were just wasting away until they figured out what they wanted to do, and they never did. As far as WCW, I was born and raised there. I've seen days where we would go to a show, and that day they was putting the show together instead of the show already being put together weeks ago. But the morale in the locker room was, I can't wait to get out of here. I hate this place. Things have changed from what it used to be, where 6 months they would have, the agenda set up, and now it was like day by day, like the company was dying, which it ended up dying. But as far as I feel about WCW, they got me out of the school. They got me on TV. They put me on every single show. So, I have the utmost respect for WCW. As far as TNA, TNA is one of those places where I can say, I've been there from the beginning. I've been there since day one. I'm there now. And speaking of there now, and when we started in the beginning, it was totally different. We was like, well, let's see what's going to happen. We'll go. We'll see how long this is going to last. But, it's 3 years now. TNA is going to make it. It's taking time, and it takes time. We're not a WCW. We're not a WWE. They have room to make mistakes, and they have room, to do certain things and have girls come out there naked. TNA can't do that because of, so many things have changed. We're the new company coming out, so everybody's watching us and what we can and can't do. But as far as locker rooms, TNA locker room, it's one of the best locker rooms I've ever been in. Right now, everybody's biggest concern is, we only got an hour. I want to be out there. I want to show them what I can do. I want to get out there on TV. I want to do promos. But we all can't do it because all we have is an hour. So, we just have to put our egos aside, put the show first. And when our time comes and TNA is ready for us, then we step up to the plate and knock a home run like we've been doing.
Yeah. Well, it's actually interesting that you bring that up about TNA's style and kind of the evolving style of wrestling and women being naked, as you said, in WWE. It almost seems like TNA is beginning now to embrace this kind of new style, almost, I don't say embracing it now, finally, because they've kind of always embraced it to an extent, the X Division. And it almost feels like, to a certain extent, that's kind of going to be the next thing, almost. It's going to be more of a focus on the in-ring action with the type of fans that we have in wrestling today who want to see more athleticism in the ring. How do you feel about the X Division and how it's kind of changed the casual fans' perception of wrestling?
The X Division reminds me of Cruiserweight. People said it wouldn't make it. That's not a style that people want to see it. And lo and behold, the X Division is almost like the Cruiserweight, where, everybody, there's so many fans and wrestlers, everybody want to see some of everything. And Cruiserweights and X Division, now it's like, oh my God, Cruiserweights and X Division. So it's like, I want to see them as the main event. I don't want to see, the big guys, bounce around, yell at each other, and throw each other out the ring, and bounce all through the audience, come back in the ring, and 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. The X Division gives them some of everything. And it's not about size. It's about getting in the ring and doing what you can do, whether it's in the ring or out the ring, but people want to see, the X Division, and times are changing. It's not about you know, being 6'7" and some odd pounds, you know, they want to see people fly around. They want to see people get in the ring and mat wrestle. You know, they want to see people with the total package, you know, get in the ring and do some of everything, not just one thing or, you know, this one style. And then these guys give you that one style. The X Division gives you some of everything. It's not about being 100 pounds. It's not about being 300 pounds. It's about getting in the ring and being able to deal with all type of styles. And that's what people want to see now. And that's what we give, you know, to the fans when they watch the X Division.
Yeah, it's almost like an irony, I think, because it seemed like for so long, companies like WWE and the top companies tried to convince fans that wrestling wasn't popular anymore, that it wasn't about the in-ring action, and it kind of seems like TNA almost fell into it with this, lately Samoa Joe and AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels, they're not necessarily main eventing the show, but they're captivating a lot of fans and bringing a lot of them over to that division.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, you're so right. People want to see all those other things, but when it comes to the X Division, if you look out into the audience, people are not only so into it, but they are so into it that, you know, some of them are standing, some of them are quiet. You know, sometimes I feel like when I'm watching the X Division match, I'm like Japan.
Uh-huh.
You know, the fans, when you look out into the audience, the fans are so quiet. It's like they're analyzing what they're doing just to see what's going to happen next and that aspect of it. I feel like I'm in Japan, because that's how it is in Japan. They analyze everything, and if it's good, they'll cheer, and if it's not, you won't hear a word from the crowd. So it's changing. It's changing big time with the thanks to all the guys that we have in the X Division.
So, but let me ask you this, because you're known for wrestling kind of that daring style at times, and I mean, in recent years, a lot has been made out of the fact that, again, I'm bringing up WWE, but they're slowing down their style, as they say, a lot of the high-flying moves, so that wrestlers don't get injured. But if you watch a lot of the TNA X Division matches and stuff like that, is it possible to wrestle that style without necessarily risking your neck, to be able to wrestle kind of a more exciting type of fast-paced match without killing yourself?
Actually, it can always be done. And in wrestling, first of all, there's no guarantees. Anything can happen on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we all try to look out for each other, and you just got to know who you're in the ring with. You got to trust, you know, the person that you're in the ring with. If the morale in the company is great and everybody want to go out there and want to do their best, you know, that's the last thing you worry about is injury, because you know that person on the other side of the ring for you got your back and they want to do the best, not just so you can have the best match of the night or of the year, but, you know, you want to do the best match for your company so your company can move up as a whole, you know, so we can be the number one company, not the number two or number three. You know, everybody's looking out the best interest for TNA, not just themselves. And, you know, that's why, you know, we don't have we have injuries, but it's not as much. You know, everybody, you know, we're dying to get out there. You know, if you come in backstage at TNA, people are looking at the screen, still like, oh my God, yeah, you know, like we're fans. Mm-hmm. You know, because all of us started out fans at once, but we love our product. We're all analyzing what's going on. So, in that aspect, if you look at it, you know, we all got each other's back there. Sometimes things happen and we don't want them to, but they do. But for most parts, we got each other's back.
See, it's funny about that, because I think a lot of times some of the injuries that happen in the ring, I mean, they don't necessarily even happen from high-risk moves. I mean, I think back to Bagwell and Rick Steiner in WCW. It was a bulldog that damn near broke his neck, but if you watch the tape of the move, it was this low-impact kind of, you couldn't even tell something happened. So it's almost like it's part of the industry that, you know, you can get injured at any time, any place.
Yeah, it doesn't really have to be a high-risk move. It could just be, you know, any given day, you know, something happens, something go wrong, or, you know, miscommunication, and there you go, some person injured, or somebody can be hurt for life.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up the fact that you have to work with somebody that you can trust in the ring and somebody that you can have kind of a good back and forth with. If you had to pick somebody throughout all your time in wrestling that you think you've had some of the best matches with and you could trust the most in the ring, who'd you pick?
God, it would be like Kidman, Rey Mysterio, any member of Triple X, AJ, I work with Samoa Joe. I mean, all of those guys. You know what the funny thing is, TNA, I'll get in the ring with any one of our wrestlers and I won't worry about anything. And just some of the guys, like Samoa Joe, I work with twice. And I'll get in the ring and I'll do my craziest move or whatever it is, and I'll have total faith in Samoa Joe, because, you know, we all care about, you know, it's not just each other. I'm telling you, it's I mean, you have to be there to see what I'm talking about. You know, it's TNA first, because we all know once TNA get up to the next level, you know, everybody's going to get more. More money, more this, more that, more time. And, you know, everybody's going to get what they want. But to understand what I'm saying, you just have to be there backstage to see the morale of everybody, you know, wanting the company to do better.
Well, I mean, I can definitely imagine, especially now, you guys went from, I mean, as we said before, those weekly Wednesday shows, kind of going there just simply because, you know, you really needed a place to work. They were getting to the point where they were starting to become the number two, even though there really was no one else around. It was them and WWE. And now, in the last couple of months, you guys have had Christian Cage make the decision to go from WWE to TNA. That had to have been a good adrenaline shot for you guys to kind of give you a boost.
Yeah, we're number two, and everybody know it, and nobody that I know that is number two don't fight to be number one. But when you have people that work for another company and they're so miserable, you know, they're on top and they're so miserable, and they go for pay cuts and so on and so forth just to be with another company, and it's not even that, it's like, all right, fine, you know, you guys don't know what the hell you're doing, I'm going to go to this company and I'm going to help them stick it to you.
Uh-huh.
So how happy are those guys over there?
Well, that's got to be the thing that brings a smaller company up, that kind of revenge thing. And it's almost, we had Rhino on last week and we were talking about this, the irony that with WCW, with their low morale, so many wrestlers left there to go to WWE for less pay just so they could stick it to Bischoff. And now it almost seems like guys are leaving WWE for less pay just to stick it to the writers.
Yeah, it's a vicious circle. I think people forget, and, you know, we all love wrestling, but they forget, you know, we have all of these things, we have all of these beautiful lights, and we have all these arenas, and this and that, but you can't do wrestling without the wrestlers or the ring.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, everything else is more important, but they forget about the little things. But if you think about it, the bottom line is you got to have wrestlers and you got to have a ring.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, that's you can't have a wrestling show without a wrestling match.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything else is extra. Everything else is eye candy, but you gotta have a wrestler and you gotta have that ring.
Well, speaking of the ring, what's it like with the six-sided ring? I mean, how does that change the dynamic for you in there? I mean, you wrestled in, you know, all over the world, so being in TNA, that is one of the main things that sticks out differently. How do you feel about it? Has your opinion on it changed since you guys debuted it?
It was funny because when we first saw it, it's like, what the hell? But then, you know, come on, let's get in the ring. And everybody's like playing in the ring to see what they can and can't do. I love the six-sided ring. It's just like a cage match. You know, it's like a triple stack cage. It's just something different where we can do things that other people can't. But the best thing about our ring is we get it every single show. It's not a special show that we have that ring. We have it every single night. So that, to me, that gives us an advantage. But it's just like any other ring. Regular ring. Once you get used to working in it, you know, it's just like working in a regular ring. To us, the six-sided ring is a regular ring, where to other people, when they get into it, they get lost, and they get thrown from one rope to the other rope. They're like, what the hell, which way do I go?
Yeah.
To us, you know, it's like an everyday occurrence.
Yeah, no geometry at that point to figure out
what
you bounce off of. See, now you brought up a cage, so I gotta ask you what I guess everybody asks you. The night that you did the Hurricane Rana off the top of the cage, the six sides of steel at I guess it was Turning Point, and you took down Chris Harris. Tell me a little bit about that, about the decision to do that and the reaction afterwards.
Oh God, let me tell you. First of all, we didn't tell anybody we was doing it because our first cage match 18 months prior, I gave him the idea, hey, you know, we're thinking about me getting up there walking a cage. And he was like, no, you can't do it. You know, you're going to kill yourself, or you're going to hurt the other wrestler, or you guys will be out for months and we need you. And, you know, it's just too high risk. What if you fall out to the floor?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's too high up. So it was X right away. We couldn't do it. So this time going around, we was talking about some of the stuff we might do or whatever, and I was like, I want to walk the cage. And I was like, Neil looked at me like, are you crazy? No, I said, I'm serious. He's like, they're not going to let you walk the cage. I said, well, we don't have to tell them. We don't have to tell them. So everybody's asking us, you know, what are you guys going to do? Oh, you know, normal stuff, nothing big, whatever, you know, just the normal stuff, keep it in the ring. Oh, my God, let me tell you, when I got up there, The audience went crazy. Tracy Brooks told me everybody in the back was standing up and yelling and screaming, "No, he's not! No, he's not!" And sure enough, you know, I walked the cage. The crowd screaming, "Don't kill yourself, it's not worth it." And then I walked across. I gave him the Hurricanrana. The building was on fire. Everybody screaming, "Holy shit, best move ever, best match of the year." I'm telling you, I hit that canvas, and oh, every bone in my body was hurting. I heard the crowd yelling and screaming, and then all of a sudden, all the pain just went away. You know, it's probably the greatest feeling ever, you know, because sometimes you feel like you got to bring a gun out to the ring, you know, to get people
stand up,
take notice of your match. But that day we did it without a gun, and everybody crazy, and people still talking about it today.
Well, explain to fans who don't really, who've never been in the ring, is it the kind of thing where, I mean, was there any practice that went into this, or is it the kind of thing that you just, you kind of figured you knew you could do it?
I just always felt I could do it. You know, I always walked the rope, and if you think about it, a rope moves a lot more than a cage does. So I just figured the cage is sturdier than a rope, so if I can walk a rope, why can't I walk a cage? But the only thing I didn't really think about, I always thought about doing it, but I never thought about the landing, and I never thought about it. The other two are fighting at the other end of the cage, and I'm trying to walk it, it would be a little harder. So that's why if you ever watch that tape, you'll notice when I'm trying to climb up on it and stand on it, I couldn't because they're fighting at the other end, shaking it.
Uh-huh.
So I finally just bounced up and I hurried up and took off and did it. But those are the only things I didn't really think about. But I just always knew I could do it. I never practiced it. It was just one of those things I said to myself, if I ever get the opportunity to do it, people crazy enough to do it with me, I'd do it, and I did it.
See, it's funny, cause people compare it a lot to Foley and that Hell in a Cell match with the bump that he had taken. And I remember Foley had always said that most wrestlers respected the fact that he took that second bump where he fell through the top of the cage and hit the canvas, because traditionally, I mean, we all know canvas is usually a lot harder than people kind of give it credit for. They think it's almost like a trampoline that it bounces, but anybody who's been on it, it almost feels like a painter's canvas. It's not kind of a bouncy thing as much as we would expect. So what was that like? I mean, landing from that high up for you and Chris, I mean, that had to suck. Any long-term, anything kind of affect you afterwards?
No, it was one of those deals where when I hit, and I'm telling you, everything just hurt. The air just flew out of me. And it's like, you know, like as I'm flipping in the air, I'm knowing, like I'm about to hit the canvas, you know, exhale to let the hair out. And everything I went through and all the training, none of it helped at that point because I was so high up and I'm flipping in the air so the momentum's faster. Let me tell you, I hit that canvas and everything just hurt. I couldn't breathe. It was just pain. And then next, you know, you just heard the crowd cheering. And I was like, Chris, you know, in the back later on, we were like, you know, we pulled it off. We couldn't believe we did it. We didn't practice it. And Chris was like, you pulled it off. I'm like, we did it. I'm glad you took it. I was like, how was the bump? He said, I will never ever do that again. It's way too high up to take bump like that. I said, who the hell are you telling? He was sitting on the cage. I stood across it and went. So you can imagine, you know, I know it hurt for him, but it hurt like hell for me too. But, you know, you can ask Chris and myself. You ask us, will we ever do it again? If, you know, the opportunity and it was right and it would make sense, yes, we both do it again because it was well worth it.
Well, I mean, what was the reaction like from your non-wrestling fans and friends? I mean, it's the kind of thing that, I mean, I showed people who don't necessarily even watch wrestling just because it's just really a crazy thing to see. What was the reaction like for people who aren't in the business that are close to you?
I had people, my mom called me and she said a lot of things, but the nicest thing she said was, I'm crazy as hell, amongst other things, but she told me, you know, she was just scared and she was like, you know, what's next? You know, she was just being a mom. I had people come up to me and said, I never watched wrestling until I heard about you doing that crazy move, and then I ordered it just to see what you did. And then I had wrestlers call me, some of my friends from WWE would call me like, you know, we didn't see the pay-per-view, or some of the boys watched it and they told me what you did. Did you know I reordered it the next day just to see what you did because they said it was so insane and so crazy I had to see it. And that's like the highest compliment in the world, you know, when you get players or you get people that don't even, you know, care anything about wrestling and all of a sudden they want to watch it just to see something that they heard because it was so crazy and it was whole way, you know, to eject it, just you had to see it. You know, to me, that was like the best compliment in the world. I always say to myself, I always want to top everything I do, but that's one of the things I'm never going to top. I'm just going to appreciate it because I don't think I can top it.
Yeah, I mean, once you start trying to top that, you do one of those weird Shane McMahon things where you land on pillows from the top of a skyscraper kind of thing. Well, during that match, you were teaming up with Triple X at the time, and you've been through a lot of different partners in your career. And right now, you're currently teaming with David Young as the Diamonds in the Rough. And you and Young, actually, you guys worked against each other even at Ring of Glory. It seems like you've been working a lot together. What's it like working with David? How do you feel about having him as a partner?
Dave's good. Dave's really good. He's into wrestling like I am. You know, we both train a lot. We study tapes. He's a fun partner. The only bad thing I would say is that he has that streak of losing so many times, and now I feel like I'm caught into it with him. But it's not by Dave's choice. It's because of some idea that they had and they never finished.
Uh-huh.
But it's good to work with Dave. But if I was to pick my best team, it would be Triple X, and it wasn't because... you know, we were winning a lot of whatever it was. It's just we had so much fun in the ring, and I guess it showed because there were days we did things and we was like, well, we'll just see how it's going to turn out. And next you know, it was like people thought it was the best match in the world, and we were just in the ring having fun. And me and Dave haven't got, you know, to that point yet where it was almost natural with, you know, the Triple X.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you bring it up. You bring up the losing streak that he's on. You guys were, though, involved in one high-profile thing as a team when you did the deal with the White Sox against AJ and Dale Torberg. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that, about how that came about and your feelings about doing that angle.
Oh, actually, that was fun. That was a good day. It was one of those deals where... You know, we're wrestlers. He's a baseball player. And... you know, mixing baseball with wrestling is great because now you get so many people that's into baseball to watch wrestling. Mm-hmm. And with our product and, you know, what we give to the people, if we can get some of those baseball fans to cross over and stay over, you know, that was the deal behind that. But even working with Dale Torberg, people don't realize that when I first got into wrestling, he was in WCW, and he used to train with me down to school. So to me, it was fun to get into the ring with him because it's like 9 years later. It's like, you know, Dale, I'm sticking with it. I'm still into it. And the best part is I get to wrestle you. And another bite to this for me was like one of Dale's last matches at WCW was with me. So to me, it was like, yeah, I get Dale again. Oh, man, he helped train me. And then I'm saying to myself, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to show him how good I am. So it was fun for me and working with AJ. He was really cool. It was good.
That's cool, man. Well, I mean, going back to WCW, I mean, you saw them all come up and down. You went from the power plant and you were in the company. What are some of your memories? Like, who were some of the craziest people you dealt with while you were there, either good crazy or bad crazy, your choice?
I don't know. It was just... let's see. God, it was so many different characters in WCW. Oh, let me tell you. Scott Steiner was a good crazy, or he was a bad crazy. He was like one of those people where, you know, everybody knew he was freakishly strong. Everybody knew he could really, really wrestle. And it was like, you know, on any given day, you know, something would happen. Like, I remember we was in, Australia. Right. So him and Jerry Toot, who passed away, they were in the ring. They had some words about something. So then they moved all the tables out of the way. And these two are wrestling on the floor. I mean, just wrestling on the floor. And Jerry's trying to wrestle Steiner. And Steiner's, like, flipping them around and throwing them on the... oh, it was great. But it was like one of those deals where, look how big Jerry is, and Steiner's just throwing him around like he's nothing. Imagine if it was one of us. And that's when you come to realize that, you know, not only is he strong, but you got to remember, you know, he's one of those people that can really legit wrestle.
Oh, yeah.
You got to watch who you mess with. But he was one of those people, good or bad. You didn't want to be on his bad side. And even on his good side, you just didn't want to piss him off.
I mean, he's a scary... he doesn't look like the kind of guy that couldn't kill you if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, he's like a monster. I mean, let me ask you that. You were in WCW the night that they were purchased by WWE, the night that Shane McMahon showed up and it was the big thing. What was the mood like for you, and what was the story about as you arrived there and realized that this was it?
You know, everybody talked about it. We knew it was going to happen. We knew that this was a show. But as soon as you walked in the building and, you know, you saw the trucks and you finally saw Shane, you're like, hey, Shane, I'm Helix Skip. He's like, oh, I know who you are. Then you realize, you know, that WCW is over. You know, and as bad as everybody said they hated it and they wished that things would change, when that day came, you know, they all wished that they didn't say it. Because mm-hmm. they realized that the family of WCW that we had, the Road Brothers, and, you know, being at the shows with the people backstage, they realized it was all over. And when I say over, I know that most of us went to WWE or, you know, some of us joined their family, but then you have to understand that even though that was another family, their immediate family was going to be broken up. So as much as people say they hated WCW, that one last day, it was so quiet you could hear a pin drop because people realized it was truly going to be over, and they didn't hate it as much as they thought they did. They wanted it to be better, but they didn't want it to be over.
Yeah, that was actually such a crazy night. See, for me, I was just a fan watching TV at home, and I kind of know what you're saying, because for a while, you always thought, what would it be like if WWE owned WCW? What would it be like if they were one company? And it kind of felt like within the first minute of Vince being on Nitro, I was kind of over the situation and realized that long term, it wasn't the kind of thing that was going to really produce anything great because the competition was now gone.
That's the same way I looked at it. I always kept saying, before it even happened, because I remember Eric Bischoff was trying to do something with the company and buy WCW, and I was like, please let that happen. And the only reason I wanted that to happen is because, you know, not that I had anything against Vince, but what would happen with the competition? And, you know, it's like McDonald's and Burger King. Burger King can't buy out McDonald's because the competition is over. You know, you got to have that rivalry where with one person piss you off, you can go to the other person. If the other person piss you off, you can go to the other person. You got to have it. And we lost that with wrestling. Everybody thinking, well, you know, if I can't watch The Rock this week, I'll watch him a month from now. He'll still be there. And that was just the attitude. You know, he owned everything. So what was the point? You know, we had to watch, you know, what he put out there. You know, to me, it wasn't like you really had a choice. The only choice you had was whatever choices he made. And now that TNA is coming up, you know, we're giving the public a choice. And that's something that you have to have, you know, in everything, in every part of life. You got to have that choice.
I mean, well, did a part of you feel that they might actually do kind of a separate promotion with Shane? I mean, what was the feeling? Was it just kind of like everyone accepted that that was the end of it? Or was there any feelings of people that perhaps maybe Vince might make it run as a separate wrestling company? Was that even a consideration?
Well, actually, that's what we thought at first, that he would, you know, run it as a separate company, so it would be some type of competition. But then as weeks went by and, you know, we was listening, like I was home for the first 3 months. I was getting paid, but I was home. And I'm watching everything that's going on, and I'm watching what they're doing on TV, and I realized they would have their show, and then they'd have, like, a WCW show at the end, or they'd have two matches of WCW, or one match of WCW. And then more weeks went by, and then I realized they started putting all the talents together, or they split up the show. And then I realized, you know, it's not going to be a competition. It's going to be all of his boys. He'll give people what they want to see at first, and they'll want to see, you know, people wanted to see the matches they thought they would never see because one was with one company and one was another company. So they did that for a while, and after that died off, you know, it was done. You knew the competition was over, whatever they wanted to do.
See, it's so crazy because everybody talks about kind of the botched invasion angle, but, I mean, I think if we're really thinking about the way they, I don't say ruined WCW, but I mean, they purchased WCW that one night, and then it was almost like weeks went by before anything happened. I think the first time some people appeared at WrestleMania 17 in the crowd, it almost seemed like they purposely didn't strike while the iron was hot. I mean, everyone talks about WCW's name wasn't really what it once was, but if it ever was going to be worth anything, it would have been right after he purchased it, you know? And it kind of seemed like they just scaled it back right after buying it.
Yeah, I totally agree. They just waited. And while it was really, really hot and people wanted to see what was going to happen, they did nothing. They just dropped the ball. And I guess, you know, they always say Vince is a really, really smart businessman, but on that one decision or whoever made it, to me, they dropped the ball too. They didn't do anything. They waited. And people wanted something to happen so bad, and they waited to give it to them. But then on the other flip side of that is people figured, well, hell, if the two companies together, I could see my dream matches. And meanwhile, they gave that to them right away. You know, they didn't build angles out of it or whatever, or long enough angles to me. They could have got months out of it, and they did it like in weeks, and it was done. You know, WCW against WWE, and they go in the one night, they go in the next night, boom, WWE on top, of course, and WCW down, and that was it. You know, the angle was done, and to me, they dropped the ball on that aspect, too.
I mean, it almost seems like a part of him doesn't want to admit that a company, I mean, might say him, Vince McMahon, a company outside of his company, is known at all in some ways. And it's almost like, I mean, they had that initial match. It was Bagwell and Booker T, which was just the debacle on Raw that kind of went down. But one of the main things that you can kind of look at was the sign of Eric Bischoff when he worked for WWE for a few years. And I know that you've watched WWE's product and you worked under Eric Bischoff in WCW. What were your feelings about seeing how he was used and kind of watching Eric Bischoff on Raw? What were your feelings about that?
You know what? When I saw that, I realized, you know, oh my God, things have really, really changed. Because if you met Eric in WCW, it was like, you know, I've worked there for months, and I never spoke to him. I've worked there for like a year or 2 years. Maybe said hi to him. I know, you know, I wouldn't expect for him to remember my name with all the other people there and things that were going on. And then just to see him out there doing the stuff he was doing with WWE, I was like, God, you know, times have really changed. This man went from untouchable to like, I don't know, it wasn't the Eric Bischoff that I knew or respected. It was just a different person. But I realized, you know, times change and, you know, he's got to make it work with whatever he's doing. So I guess, you know, that's what happened with him in WWE.
Yeah, it was just surreal, I think, from almost the day that he arrived until the day he left. It was just this big surreal experience where he aged about, you know, 15 years within the 2 years that he worked there.
Yeah, it was like, ooh, oh God, this is not the Eric I remember.
Well, let me ask you this, man. You go back through history, any promotion, any wrestling company, and you could wrestle anybody you wanted to. Who would you pick?
Ooh, I could wrestle anybody I want to. It would be the Great Muta back in his best day.
Oh, nice. What day was that? What would you pick?
Back in the Great Muta, back in the time when he used to wrestle Sting, when he just came over from Japan.
89, 90. Like 1989, around that time, 1990?
Yes.
That was some...
just watching him remind me of the Cruiserweight style, you know, the X Division style, where he was doing the crazy things. And, you know, I guess, you know, watching things like that is the reason why you have, you know, the X Division now. So I would love to wrestle him.
The Moody used to blind me. I remember when he first showed up in WCW and he was doing the those quick elbow drops where he would run and sprint across the ring and just drop lightning quick, man. It was different because WWE at the time was putting on, or WWF at the time was putting on things like, you know, the Akeem and the Big Boss Man, and WCW was really kind of taking it to the next level back then.
Right. Well, it was all big guys, no little guys, all big, I remember.
Like, I mean, you've watched for a while. I mean, you're a fan of the industry. What were some of your influences growing up? Who were some of your favorite wrestlers?
Oh, man, my favorite wrestlers. Actually, I used to love, like, Hulk Hogan. I loved him because it was like he started, you know, doing some of the crazy things that led to what we have today. Tony Atlas, you know, to me, back then, watching him, his size and his, you know, freaky appearance, and it's like, God, this guy is ungodly strong. Steven Regal, I used to love his cocky character and the fact that not only was he cocky, you know, a cocky character, but he could mat wrestle anybody, you know, anybody. It was just great, you know, to watch guys like that. Dave Taylor, I used to love watching him wrestle. Back then, I used to, when I watched wrestling, I wasn't into the high flying. I was more into the mat wrestling. So any type of mat wrestling, like Chris Benoit, I used to watch his tapes back in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Mat wrestling was it for me. You know, I loved the high flying, but I was more into, you know, I would analyze it, like, ooh, he grabbed him this, he put him in that type of hole, because, you know, back in the day, I was into martial arts, so, you know, it made sense to me if you put him in a technical move and tied him up, you know, that stuff kind of turned me on, so that's the type of wrestler that I watch. I like to watch when I was coming up.
No, there's actually, I mean, you bring it up and you're bringing back all these memories to me, but I mean, the time period that you're talking about, I kind of agree with you because I liked a lot of that wrestling, too. I remember specifically, I think, WCW had that Clash of Champions that was all based on, it was the NWA Tag Team Title Tournament, and I think Gordy and Williams won, and that was actually the first time we saw Benoit. He went out there with Biff Wellington, I think was his partner, and I mean, Benoit just, he has a kind of this realistic mat wrestling style where he looks like he's trying to kill you, but at the same time, he's putting on a great technical match.
Yeah, but see, that's the style that I love. And then if you throw in a tad bit of high flying, you know, you got the total package. You can do it all. Because to me, you know, as a fan, you got some of everything. You got the mat wrestling, you know, you got the killer instinct, and you have the high flying. What else could you ask for?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Elix, I mean, we're going to close it up now. So do you have anything that you want to say to your fans before we let you go here?
Hey, I want to say to all the fans, keep watching TNA and keep watching PT. TNA don't realize they've always had prime time, but now they really got prime time because we got a prime time hour to watch prime time, and we're going to move up slowly but surely. People never thought we'd last this long, and guess what? We're still around. So we're going to turn it around for you guys and make you love wrestling the way you used to.
Nice, Elix, man. Thank you so much for being on, man.
Hey, you got it. Anytime.
Thanks, man. And thanks to all of you guys for listening. Once again, this is James Gutman. You have been listening to Radio Free Insanity right here on WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. Remember, and I've been saying this for weeks, our guests are just going to keep coming in, so we should have some people lined up for the next few weeks that you guys will be excited about. Last few weeks have been really good. We had Rhino, we had Samoa Joe, a lot of people on the agenda, a lot of people ready to come on in and talk to us, so be sure to check it out. Also, go to the site, check out a lot of things we have going on at WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. You'll be very happy with a lot of the content that we have going up, a lot of new things on the horizon, so keep checking back. Until we next meet, this is James Gutman saying thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing our insanity.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.